Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RTE.ie, it's called the Broadway Diner on Tour. Sounds fantastic. Broadway comes to Dublin. Mary Hickey, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you? Good afternoon.
And when did you hear about this event called Broadway, the Broadway Diner?
Yeah, so last October, actually, so 10 months ago, I heard about this Broadway Diner and there was a link to it on Facebook.
Okay.
So I clicked into it and it had, I suppose, what you would expect, pictures and reviews and things that looked very spectacular.
Okay.
So I went ahead and I went on, clicked on the booking section and everything looked very, I suppose, what you would expect.
Okay.
Nothing, I suppose, to think, you know, that anything would crop up later. So I went ahead and booked and the money left my account and I got my tickets via email, a booking number,
yes,
and I got an email address to contact if I should require any further information. So at that point in time, I suppose I was happy and looking forward to.
So when is it on, Mary?
So the event is supposed to be tomorrow.
Oh,
the
fantastic.
7th of August. Well, I don't have a venue, Joe.
So you don't know if it's on the West Side story? You don't know if it's in Oz?
Yes.
You don't know if it's an American in Paris? Chicago? Where will you hear? Where do you hope you will hear the sound of music, so to speak, tomorrow? My fair lady, Mary, if I may call you that.
I would be willing to get in my car and drive anywhere in the vicinity of Dublin, but I am getting very worried because I have sent several emails requiring the venue.
Yes.
And I have got a kind of a generic response. We'll be back to you in 48 hours. Then I sent further emails. The booking was actually for my daughter's birthday. So you can imagine I'm kind of.
Oh, you booked for a group. So you paid well over 100 euro. Fair play.
I paid 116 euro to be exact, yes.
Say there, Mary. Ruth is called Joe at RT.ie. Ruth, you're another one of Les Miserables
for tomorrow.
What did you do?
It was actually in September, September. I booked a ticket. Same as Mary. I saw it on Facebook and clicked into the link and everything looked great. So I booked 6 tickets and got my confirmation, my booking number, my tickets, and it had stated on the Facebook page that the venue would be confirmed closer to the time. It was kind of a pop-up thing, and it would be confirmed. So my tickets are for Friday. My tickets are not for tomorrow. My tickets are for Friday.
It's on. It's due to be. Okay.
Yeah. There was lots of dates, so I don't know. I don't think myself and Mary will be the only ones who were caught.
As I say, we've one day more, as they say, Les Mis, before we find out. But it's a bit short notice, isn't it, at this stage?
Absolutely, and it was a kind of my children are very much into musicals, and they were really, really looking forward to it. As was myself, we were really looking forward to it. So it's kind of a bit of a worry now that it's not actually going to happen.
And Mary, I know it's a hard knock life, as they say, but Mary, when you looked up the website, where has Broadway Diner been on before that assured you to spend well over 100 euro?
Yeah, I guess I was looking at, it seemed to actually hit various venues. Like, I suppose I would always kind of look to England because that would be, feeling like it would be close enough to home, so to speak. So I would have seen Manchester.
Okay.
London, the pictures seemed to reflect what we were buying into, which was the American experience pop up, as Ruth mentioned. There was nothing to suggest that it wasn't going to go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's been particularly alarming today is that I've gone from getting kind of a generic email response to now an email that's actually bouncing back.
Ah.
Email no longer in use.
No, that's not good.
No.
That is not good.
So I'm in a bit of a predicament. So what do I do tomorrow?
Well, maybe like, but what type of? So it's a pop up venue. So,
yes.
Like, what type of from the photographs you saw, which persuaded you to spend uh-huh. the money? What type of venue is it? In a diner? Is it in a? I'm sure it isn't, but is it in an Eddie Rockets type location?
Well, I think the idea of it seemed to be that. You know, that they maybe move into, a restaurant, but they will, I suppose, the decor would match, I suppose, the American experience, or even kind of a warehouse type.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, you know, a Van Gogh experience, I think, at one stage there, a pop-up venue.
Yeah,
you know, it was that kind of idea that you can kind of go anywhere, because it was, that's why I'm particularly worried, because if it's a pop-up venue, it takes time to organise. So surely know where it is at this stage.
Well, I can tell you, I was sceptical, like, on this programme about the pop-up venue for the Van Gogh experience. But it opened in Artane, behind the new Lidl there in Artane, behind where the Start. Well, the Start was infrastructure still there, but it's a new warehouse. It was by far the best artistic show I've seen in a long, long time. So pop-ups it was absolutely, I went twice or three times. It was absolutely brilliant. So we... fingers crossed that it doesn't become the Phantom of the Diner by tomorrow. And was that the plan, Ruth, that all the songs are from Broadway musicals? They better be, because that's all my puns.
Yeah.
Exhausted.
That's what it came across as, you know, like it was advertised as the American Diner Experience, but that the staff would be Broadway singers, so they'd be singing songs from all the musicals. So that was what it was advertised as, and it sounded fantastic. Like, you know, but
and what do you get now? The tickets, are 27 quid? Is that right?
Yeah, they weren't that dear. Like, it wasn't.
Yeah, that's
really
right. Thank you. Well, maybe now. Hang on. You see, this could be 20. What were you offered for €27?
The food was going to be like, you know, burger and fries. That was was food, burger and fries, and then they were going to have a full bar. But obviously, you had to pay for your drinks. Yeah,
but a full bar, unless you're already in a venue, a full bar you need a license.
Absolutely.
And for a license, you need to go to the district court. In the district court, you need to bring in a barrister with you. So that's money.
Yeah.
So to speak, another reference there to a musical, and that went over everyone's head.
I got it.
It really is a little shop of horrors at this stage. Now, so a shout out, anyone in Dublin. Nowhere the Broadway Diner on tour is tomorrow. It's down at Wednesday, the 7th of August, from 2 to 3.30. Because you're later on the week. Mary Hickey and Ruth Brady are wandering in the desert. You're not singing in the rain, but you are wandering in the desert trying to find a location. Can anyone help us?
And just to mention as well, the company behind this, looking at the email and stuff, seems to be Hidden Explorer. So maybe there's somebody out there that has used Hidden Explorer for other shows. You know, maybe they could shed a light as well, because Hidden Explorer seems to be the email address and the contact address. And if you Google it, it does seem to exist, so to speak. But the Broadway Diner on Tour seems to now have disappeared off Google.
Yeah. And if you try to contact Hidden Explorer themselves, because they'd be upset now someone is duping.
Well, I emailed hello@explorehidden.com numerous times. As I said, no reply. Initially I got a generic reply, then I got no reply, and now the email's actually bouncing back, which was the best.
Yeah, I was the same.
They're getting numerous emails.
By the way, did you all pay by credit card? Does that not help? If
I contacted the bank.
Yeah, okay. And what did the bank say?
And the bank told me that, because I just inquired as to where my money actually went, like they have a name, they have a location.
Okay.
And they told me that the system doesn't tell them if it's more than 6 months ago, and regarding any money back, I was told that if it goes beyond 2 months, there's no money back. So even though I booked by card,
Say that again.
So the bank will not return any money unless it's within the last 2 months. And if it's with the, if it's over 6 months, they can't tell me. Yeah, they can't tell me where the money went, country or person.
So does that mean? Okay, you know we've been
by 116 euro. Yes. Yep.
Because we've been doing that. I think we did it. You remember the concert last year down in down on the Naas Road, Forever Young. I remember it was flooded, or the rain came, and it was a disaster. No, it was the fault of the weather, I suppose. But I know there's people still looking for their money back from that, and they were promised. Yeah, the organizer was on this program, and she promised us that she'd give the money back. But I was reading Sandra Mallon, and that was the Star. Was it Saturday or yesterday, Monday? And she said no one has got their money back, which is shocking. But anyway, Sarah, Joe at RT.ie, we're trying to find the Broadway Diner, or is it being run by the Lion King? Sarah.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Well, what did you do?
Well, I bought my tickets back in October last year for my daughter. I bought 4 tickets for her Christmas present, and it was due for next Sunday, the Broadway Diner on tour in Dublin. And then I thought a couple of weeks ago, I hadn't heard anything, and I tried to find something online, couldn't find anything. It seems that on Reddit, it just shows that they think the tour has ceased trading. Whether it ever started, I don't know.
Luck.
But
was due to be on what, Sarah, as far as you know, for 4 days?
Well, I just got it for Sunday the 11th, because that's when it suited us.
But Mary is tomorrow, Ruth is Friday. Do either of you know, either of the three of you know, Mary, Ruth or Sarah, do you know, was it due to be on for 5 days?
It was actually due to be on for a couple of weeks.
So much money have they got?
Yeah,
there's a lot of people out there.
You know, and it was different times. It was going to be on maybe 3 or 4 times a day, different times. That's like my time slot for Friday
for
half six.
Oh, hang on, this
That's
is much
true.
More serious.
Yes, mine was in the afternoon. Mine was in the afternoon, I remember that. So we could get up and down from Wexford for the day. Yeah.
So how many shows do you think there was a day?
I think there probably was maybe 3 or 4 shows a day. I was looking for half six.
And we've someone now who booked for tomorrow. Someone has booked for next Sunday. Someone has booked for Friday. So I presume they sold tickets for every day until Sunday, at least. With 3 shows a day. They're after coining it.
Absolutely.
Well, they better let us know very quickly. And apparently it's based on a phenomenon in New York. Is it, Sarah, where there are diners that have music? Tell us.
Oh, absolutely, yes. We went to New York about 3 years ago, and I wanted to go to one, but the queues are around the corner, so you just couldn't get into them. So I thought, great, coming to Dublin, we'll do it from here. So that's really disappointing.
And that is not. There's a lot of money gone.
Yeah.
There is a lot of money gone. This is much more. I'm sorry I treated it so lightly at the start, because I thought it was just one show. And then Ruth said Friday. And then Sarah said Sunday. And then Sarah said they had an unlimited run. And then Sarah said they were selling tickets for three shows a day.
Yeah, well, I was, I think, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3:30 in the afternoon, so that we could get up and down. So, yeah, there was plenty to choose from.
Okay, so anyone know anything about Broadway Diner on Broadway on tour, or is it Broadway Diner on tour, Mary? On tour, what's on your ticket? What's the name on your ticket?
The Broadway Diner on Dublin.
Okay. Due to start tomorrow. And have we any... See, we've no idea how many tickets they were selling for each show.
No. I wonder, actually, is it starting today? Because, the bank holiday, somebody was saying they were going to book
it all.
Yes. It'd be really interesting if someone was due to go today and their time slot has already gone. That would be very interesting.
And do they say anything on
Did
they say, about the mystery tour, do they say anything on the ticket that this is part of the trope, this is part of the gag, you won't know until the day before, this is part of the structure of it and the joy of it and the mystery of it? No,
Well, I guess that's what I initially thought, like, which is why I was, I mean, looking back now, I feel a bit silly that I didn't query the venue, but mystery tours have become such a big thing that I didn't. And I, you know, there's been pop-up shops and, you know, it does happen quite often that they don't tell you the exact location. And because I booked it 10 months ago, you know, I gave them that, I suppose, in good faith. I gave them the benefit of the doubt that, you know, they would eventually contact me. And then just like Sarah said, I was getting a bit worried because I was booking it for an occasion. And as I was getting closer, I was kind of, you know, kind of saying, well, I kind of need to know the location now so that
course,
I know.
Of course, logistics, you know, parking, transport
you,
to, from,
well,
public,
you can
public transport,
Okay. I have the tickets, just by email,
Sarah. Yeah, I have the tickets too. And it just says ticket type, show entry and meal, and then the ticket code. But I presume it's not real anymore. I don't know.
And the credit card company, Mary, can't... the bank can't tell you who got the money.
Well, I rang AIB and I was surprised to say that I was just told, like, system says no. If it's more than 6 months old, they can't tell me the country or the person that received the money.
Okay. All right, let the plea go out. Broadway Diner on Tour Dublin, due to start tomorrow, as far as we know, could be today, due to start tomorrow, a number of shows every day in a mystery location in Dublin to go on at least until next Sunday, possibly beyond. They were selling, we don't know how many tickets they've sold, we know, and they've now taken in a lot of money, obviously, with those shows. And we'll try and find out more. Broadway Diner on Tour. Mary Hickey, Ruth Brady and Sarah. Thanks. By the way, do any of Mary or Ruth, what attracted you to the show?
Well, I love musicals. I'm a singing teacher and I own a music school.
Wow.
So, and I actually know Mary. Mary is actually part of a choir that I run here in RD. So
okay,
I actually feel
okay.
really bad because it was actually me who told Mary about it because I had booked my tickets in September. And then I was telling Mary, we were away at a choir festival in Derry, and I was telling Mary on the way and she booked her tickets there and then. So that's what attracted me to it. And, you know, I love singing. I teach singing. My children love singing. So that's kind of...
And you run a music school at the... Is it a music school? Or
I do.
What's the most
a music school, yeah.
What's the most popular among... I was at Wicked last week and I couldn't believe the number of young people, young girls who were... I think I was the oldest person there. And I love Wicked. I love musicals.
Fantastic, yeah.
It's fantastic. What's the most popular musical now that teenagers want to do?
Probably Wicked or Hamilton.
Hamilton
is a big one.
Yeah.
Hamilton's
coming to the Borgage as well.
It is, yeah. Couldn't get tickets for that one.
Well, I gave tickets away for it on Friday down in Carlow. There's some very lucky.
Joe.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe Joe, you've a few spare there.
No, I haven't.
Day.
I haven't. Sure, I was mauled after.
To make up for
tickets.
Our trauma.
No, I've got nothing here at the minute. But make up the reason I want to really highlight this is trying now. I'm saying about scams. I said it on Thursday. Please, if you get a phone call, for example, from Revolut, do not make phone calls. And if you do get a phone call from your bank or a text them back saying, you obviously know my account, therefore you know my address, therefore buy a one, put it in the post to my home address, whatever your query is. Anyway,
I
Mary.
I think we're also aware of scams.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I'm actually embarrassed I fell for it because.
Don't be.
You know, this looked so real. I mean, the tickets looked real. They had the kind of QR code. Like, it looked.
Yeah, it did.
Like the real deal.
Okay, what's your own favourite musical, Ruth?
My favourite musical is My Fair Lady.
Ah, of course.
I love all the old ones.
Yeah, fantastic. West Side Story was on the other night on RTE.
I know, fab.
It was getting rave reviews online. Great scheduling.
Really good.
Okay, Mary Hickey, Ruth Brady and Sarah, so far... So bad. Let's see what we can find out. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Again, shout out, Broadway Diner on Tour, Dublin. Thousands, I reckon, now, looking at the calls. They've got thousands of euro from people, at least. Does anyone know anything about them? Due to start tomorrow. And people, as you heard, bought tickets as far back as last September. Well, obviously the Christmas market and all that carry on. But that is a lot of money. That is a lot of money gone. Endek, Eric. Eric Nitalesi. Pronounce your second name. Yes, Eric. Eric.
Well, my real name is Endek.
Okay.
That's the way to pronounce it. But I'm a great fan. I'm still a great fan of Eric Clapton. So okay. I named myself Eric.
Oh, very good. What's your second name, Eric? Not Clapton.
My real second name is Joshua.
And then your surname, as we say in Ireland.
My surname is Nitalesi, N-I-T-A-L-E.
Okay. So you're looking, Eric, you're looking for a Galway girl. When did you meet her?
In that period, I think it was around 1977, 1979, I was studying to become a teacher of English.
Yes.
And we frequently went to, traveled to Ireland and
yes.
we cycled through Ireland and
yes.
I ended up in Galway and there I met her in a pub.
Okay. Do you remember the name of the pub?
No, I don't remember at all. I know it was very cozy. It was Irish music.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Okay. So you're in Galway. It's 1977.
Yeah.
And how did you meet Fiona?
Well, I was there with some friends, and
okay.
She was there. She was reading a book.
Okay.
A corner of the pub, and we started talking, and and after that. We became friends.
Great.
And and every time I went to Ireland, I visited her in Galway.
Okay.
I never know where she lived, but we always talked about meeting each other in town, in the centre of town.
Great. And where would you normally meet? Do you remember that, Eric?
I can't recall any names, but we usually saw each other at the pub itself.
Okay. And was on the Quay Street in Galway? Was it Nocturs or the Quays or O'Connor's out in Salt Hill? Do you know which one it was? No, it was in the centre of Galway.
Yeah.
Okay. And would it be fair to say that were your boyfriend and girlfriend for a period,
yeah.
Eric?
Okay. For that period, yes.
Oh,
fair
excellent.
To say, I didn't date anyone in Holland. And I had the feeling that that she didn't date anyone in Ireland, but because it was okay when we saw each other.
Now, as you say in your email to us, I myself am a happily married man and been for 42 years. I'm the father of one daughter. But there is a reason why I want to contact the Galway girl, and that is because you feel you were cold to her. Is that the word?
True.
Explain that.
I'm 69 years old now, Joe, and you reflect on your life. And I mean, she visited me in Holland. She came to visit me in Holland.
Right.
And I kept my distance and I gave her the cold shoulder.
Why?
And
why?
Knowing, I can think of a lot of excuses, but among others, the family opposed to her. They saw her and they didn't think she was that good for me and
for God's
sake. I was very much influenced by that and knowing what I know now I should have reacted in a very different way but I was 22, 23. And therefore I hope to have a second chance and that I could say sorry for the way I treated you.
Okay.
That's the only thing, Joe. This is my aim is noble, because I try to go along with everybody. I mean, if you don't agree with someone, okay, you can say it. You have a good debate about it, and still be friends. But I reacted in such a way that it was over, and now I'm 69. I think of myself looking back in my life. I should have done differently. I should have reacted in another way. So, if it's possible, if she contacts me, I would say sorry, very, very sorry, a thousand times, apologies.
And Eric,
times flies, but I was in Galway 2 years ago, And I was with Margaret, with Billy, and another friend of mine, Holland, who also knows this particular girl. And we separated, and so I was in Galway on my own. So, well, naturally, I was hoping to bump into her. Of course, that didn't happen.
But you did write a letter you sent to us, dear Galway girl.
Yeah, because before that I had a phone call from one of your associates a few weeks back, and she told me something about privacy, and we can't mention any names. So so therefore I contacted my other friend in Tralee, Margaret.
And have you got the letter in front of you by any chance?
No, I haven't, but I know it by heart. Just tell me.
Well, go on, read, give us a few paragraphs. You, the second paragraph. You were my girlfriend for about 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to look it up. Okay.
Okay. We had a great time together in Galway. I'll keep reading it until you find. We had a great time in Galway in the late 70s, if memory serves me correctly. It was 1977 to 1979. We were very young. I was studying to become a teacher. Do you remember? Now I am 69. Do you want to continue, Eric? You must be about the same age, maybe a bit younger. Okay, I'll do the wooing for you. I know it must be hard to find. It's not wooing. It's just reconnection to see how everyone. It's a fascination people have at that age. Though I know it must be hard to find you because you may be married and therefore have another surname. Nevertheless, I would like to give it a shot. For what reason? Can you proceed from there, Eric? For what reason?
Just a minute.
Okay.
The reason is very noble. I want to make up. That's the only thing, because Joe, the last words, famous last words, but the last word you said to me when I saw her at the station in Gouda. Gouda is not far from Rotterdam.
Yeah.
And she said, and those words. Sometimes, if I sleep very badly, those words keep haunting me. And she said, "I've come all the way to see you. I've come all the way to see you," meaning from Galway to Holland. And I, stupid me, I feel ashamed, very deeply ashamed, for reacting like that because I didn't want to see her because of the pressure I had for the rest of the family.
But just for that encounter at the train station, did you say to her, it's probably best we don't see each other again?
No.
And what prompted her to say, I've come all the way to see you?
My reaction. This is non-verbal language. She saw that something was wrong.
I've come all the way to see you, silly me.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, God, that's very sad. And by the way, just another little clue there, Eric. Do you remember what book Fiona was reading when she was in the pub when you first saw her across a glass of harp? No?
No.
No.
No, I can't remember. But the only thing, another thing which I know is that we talked about the Irish culture, and that I was reading a book called Watership Down. And she told me, there's another book for you, which could be very interesting for you, because it's got something to do with the Irish culture, and the book is called A Flock of Seagulls.
Ah.
And that book she gave to me.
Okay. Okay, well, many years have passed.
Yes,
yeah, it's nearly 45 years ago.
Yeah.
And anything might have happened in life, as you know. And you say, I'm interested in this, Eric. You say now that you're just touching 70, that you... It's a time for reflection, and is there anything else you need to apologize? No, not in radio, obviously. But is there anything else you need to apologize for? It's a long life.
Yeah, I know, but this is one thing that really stands out, because again, she told me, I've come all the way to see you, and I reacted very distant and gave her the cold shoulder, and sometimes when I can't sleep, this particular situation comes back to me, and I react in another way, in a different way, but of course that's not true. And because the situation is still there. But as I said before, and I've got the letter in front of me now, there are things in life one must do. Well, this is certainly one of those things I really must do. I want to make apologies. I want to say sorry for the way I treated you. And hopefully she reacted in a good way. If not, well, it serves me right.
Okay. But should you not move on, Eric, in terms of your own therapy?
True. True. Okay. Margaret said the same to me when 2 years ago, when I was in Ireland. She said something in the same vein like you do at the moment, and I felt very reassured at that particular moment.
But have you told your wife and your daughter that you're doing this?
And my daughter knows about it because she helped me with trying to find Fiona. I mentioned the name.
Fiona's fine. There's 3 million Fionas.
Okay. Yeah. That's true. And
a surname is fairly common as well.
True.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe she heard this and that'll be enough.
Hopefully.
You know, life moves on.
My aim is noble. The only thing I want to do is make it right, because this is
Well, the fact that you've said it publicly on national radio here in Ireland, Eric, says a lot for you. In terms of your obviously family life, good and healthy, thank God. What do you do in life in terms of work outside the home?
As I told you before, I'm at that period I was studying to become a teacher of English.
And did you become
German?
Did you become a teacher?
Yes. Teaching for about 40 years, and
that's why you're
3 years ago I retired 3 years ago.
Okay, and you've heard that's why you're such good English. Though most people in Holland are good, in Netherlands have good English. Okay, let the plea go out, Eric, and hopefully. By the way, the difference, the reaction of your family to lovely Fiona, would have anything to do with religion or? But your brothers, close. Your brothers didn't like her, was it?
Yeah, my brothers and my sister-in-law didn't like her, and I was very much influenced by that.
Okay, only in your early 20s. Okay, Eric, looking for Fiona, the Galway girl, 1977-1979. She went over to Holland. You were unkind to her, uncaring. Eric, thanks indeed. By the way, you're still friendly with your brothers and your sister-in-law.
Yeah. Okay. No problem with that.
You're forgiven them. Okay. Yeah. Eric, you mind yourself. You're a lovely, lovely person by the sounds of it.
Thank you.
You've said a lot now in terms of your contrition. That's Eric Endek Nitalesi. Joe@rte.ie. Thanks, Eric.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
And joe@rte.ie. Father Patsy Lynch. Patsy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Patsy, how are you? Because on the one hand, it's you remember your ordination day, I presume, and your family it's a magnificent occasion.
And this year, actually, 9th of June, I celebrated the Golden Jubilee.
Oh, so that's what, 50 years?
That's 50 years, yes.
Wow.
And it was actually, I was ordained the 9th of June, 1974. So with a wonderful celebration in Ballinskellig on the 9th of June this year, and organised by the parish, a momentous occasion. real celebration. And people were so delighted. I said, this is a milestone. And I had the opportunity to look through the album. And I was ordained by Bishop Eamon Casey in St. Mm-hmm. Brendan's Tralee, where I served, actually. I'm actually a missionary priest, Joe, and I was 31 years in Ghana. Came back in 2005 because the job of a missionary is to set up the church and move on. I was actually in Tralee, actually in 10 years in the church. I was ordained in St. Brendan's Tralee, and for the last 7 years, I'm down here now, staying outside Port McGee, and I absolutely love it and adore the whole scenery, the people down here, and ministering to them.
So when I saw this piece on Saturday in the Daily Mail, Anne Sheridan again, and there's a photograph of you in like a Sinead O'Connor moment, I'm tearing up all the pictures I have of Bishop Casey. Why did you tear up all the photographs?
Okay. You are aware of the RTE documentary, Bishop Casey's Buried Secrets. You know, in association with the Irish Mail. And we all knew about Annie Murphy, but we knew maybe there was something else. But what unfolded there, I just found horrifying. First of all, the former CEO of the National Board for Safeguarding...
All the verifications are there. But why did you tear up the photographs?
Yeah, because his niece, Patricia Donovan...
Okay.
I have a transcript here. She says... Some of the things he did to me, where he did them, the horror of being raped by him when I was 5, the violence, it just carried on in that vein. He had no fear of being caught. He thought he could do what he liked, when he liked, how he liked. It was almost like incense that I would dare fight against him, that I would dare try and hurt him, that I would dare try and stop him. It didn't make any difference. I feel so absolutely and completely and utterly betrayed by the church I was brought up in. I was shocked, horrified and stunned. Okay. And for 1 week, I just thought about it. But the picture of that woman telling her story just wouldn't go away. I felt that all those pictures had to go. And then I talked to Anne Sheridan and I said, I'm going to do this, show some bit of solidarity with Patricia O'Donnell.
Okay,
Patricia
show solidarity. Okay, now, the second question is, in the photographs you tore up every photograph that had Eamon Casey in it, is that correct?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Even though you were in it, even though they were photographs, your ordination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, was there four other confreres ordained on that day?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do we know where they are?
Everything with picture, but Eamon Casey and myself, everything is tore up.
Everything, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my question is, are you encouraging other people who were ordained by Eamon Casey? There was a lot of them. Do you think they should tear up photographs?
Well, that is really up to them. But I certainly feel, that I was perfectly right, and I feel very much at ease now having done that.
Okay. Now, what do you think? Because this is what has dominated Liveline in the aftermath of the program. Apart from stories of abuse, it was also stories of where people who were out of favour for various reasons with the church for completely, totally innocent reasons. Children who were being born. Stillborn or whatever, were not allowed a funeral mass, were not allowed to be buried in consecrated ground. And that led to the whole discussion about the fact that Archbishop Eamon Casey is buried in the exalted location of the crypt, the mahogany and marble crypt within the cathedral. It's below the cathedral. It's totally accessible. What do you think should happen to his remains, and what difference would it make if they were removed?
I think they have to be removed. You know, it's not up for debate. I had an email from a parishioner up in Galway said, I've not been able to sit in the chapel of the Blessed Sacrament in Galway Cathedral and cannot connect and have avoided Mass in Galway Cathedral since Eamon Casey's shocking interment there.
Okay, then we had a statement from the Diocese of Tuam and Galway, and they said they need time to consider all the different aspects of it, and they need careful consideration, a period of tranquility, and they will not be saying anything further until this this mindfulness episode on their part finishes. Mm-hmm. Why are they? Why is the diocese? You're so adamant, and people who saw the program and listened are so. Why do you think the diocese is so unsure about what to do?
I just don't know. I just don't know, and I think is that been a feature of the church? You know that. That in the past cases came up when we were very, very slow to deal with them. I think this issue is straightforward. It's a sexual predator that's been described, you know, and we know what he did. Mm. So I think we shouldn't delay unnecessary.
Mm? And what would your advice be to the diocese of?
Oh, I think that he should the decision should be made that we are going to remove him.
Okay.
Maybe where to inter the remains. Then maybe that might take some, you know, maybe some time. But that.
What you suggest Limerick near his.
Maybe at both. Yeah.
And Patsy, what I thought when I read this article on Saturday, uh-huh. and I said to myself, sure, by the time Tuesday comes when we are back on air, Father Patsy Lynch would have been disciplined and told not to say anything else. Have you got any reaction from the hierarchy or your superiors?
No, none.
Okay.
Now, a priest phoned me this morning in the diocese and he said, I congratulate you on the stance you have taken.
Okay.
And I told him, you're going on Joe Duffy to speak about it. He said, I'll say a prayer for you. You know, he commended me for what I've done.
Okay.
And I got quite a number of messages this morning. Somebody up in Offaly, Father Patsy, it's so heartening to know your stance on MKC. I'm a Catholic, a Mass-goer, and try to be a good Christian. I'm horrified and disgusted with the continuous cover-up by the hierarchy. Another one said, fair play to you, Father Patsy. I'm proud of your stance. You're a man of the people first and of the cloth second. It's a pity more priests don't step out from their comfort zone and speak out. You talk about being disciplined. I mean, I'm just telling the truth.
Yeah.
No? And something, what happened to
them? Another.
Happened?
Like,
all those cases were vulnerable people. And he repeated those
other padres have been disciplined for telling the truth or for speaking their mind. Mm-hmm. Or for Tony Flannery, I can think of the great Brian Darcy. Wasn't Brian Darcy reported to the Vatican for something he wrote in the Sunday World?
I think so. You know, yeah. but this.
So you've no fear of being disciplined over speaking out.
And I mean, why would they discipline me? What?
Okay. I know. It's a question. Yeah, but there happened even more mysterious moments of discipline within the Catholic Church. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, and Patsy.
Taking drastic action.
Okay,
Father
Patsy, would this question your vocation?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why not?
No. No, I'm there for the people, you know.
Okay.
The focus is on the people. The church defined the church in Vatican II, the people of God, is now getting back to the people. And I tell my fellow priests, Ireland is now, Joe, is the missionary country. And mission means going out among the people. And unfortunately, too many priests have gone underground. They come to the church, they say mass, and then they go. They disappear.
Okay.
I go out to Lombard shopping in Carsevi. It's not just shopping. It's the pastoral opportunity, going into the shops,
amazing
chatting
people.
With the people. Yeah, and the same way going into the schools. And we have just, we don't have big schools down here, but I have over 30 young altar servers, Joe.
Fantastic.
You know?
And, boys and girls, I hope.
Huh?
Boys and girls are allowed.
Boys and girls,
of course. Yes.
Yeah,
some dioceses where we're
and they're delighted.
To
and
let
some of them,
young girls.
Some of their parents wouldn't be in mass schools.
Okay, but Patsy, last week we had a cleric on, and she said she was at times a bit afraid to wear her white collar. Would that happen with you? You, I see the photograph in the mail.
I wear it. Yeah,
yeah,
I wouldn't
you
feel comfortable. You know. Walking down the street with a clerical collar, no, because you just know the perception, you know. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it is true.
Okay,
all
okay.
that has gone on, yeah.
Okay, Father Patsy, thanks indeed. And I know one of the things you said, I want to, once again, which you did at the start, reiterate your support for victims and the horror
absolutely,
that they went through.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Father Patsy Lynch, thanks indeed and God bless. Thanks, Patsy. Thanks, Patsy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. A difficult one to explain, but we've been getting emails about it now for about 3 months. It's called Enduring Power of Attorney. It's where people who are sometimes, not always, getting older and becoming incapacitated. So you, when they are still with capacity, you go to your solicitor and you get enduring power of attorney, obviously with the agreement, compos mentis of the person, that if anything should go wrong, the family or relatives will have the power to sign documents and to apply for different things on your behalf. And it's a very important document and people recommend you get it. Now, the department introduced a new online portal. It's called the Decision Support Service. And this is to create and register enduring power of attorney status. Now, the allegation we got was that this has caused massive delays, it's not being implemented properly. Solicitors are very upset by it and aren't fully cooperating, to say the least. It hasn't been communicated to GPs and the Fair Deal offices. It's now an uphill battle to get all of these bodies to recognise this new state documentation from the new system, which is totally digitised. Now, I heard, and thankfully Primetime took it up, I think last week, this issue, and the newsroom took it up here, and I heard the chief executive of the Decision Support Service saying there was no problems. There was might have been some glitches. It's a bit like the bottle return. There's no major problems which can't be sorted out. Now, Sinead has contacted. Sinead, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Just tell us what happened in your case. Who were you applying to get a enduring power of attorney for?
So I was applying to get one for my father.
Why? Why?
He's in his 80s, and it had been, I have, you know, like a couple of friends who are solicitors, or they would have said to me, look, that's something that you should look into. So as he, you know, it had been on our plan to do it, myself and my sister, okay, over the last couple of years. And unfortunately, I was a couple of months too late. By the time I went to try and do it, the legislation had changed.
And this so new system had come in, the decision support, this new organisation had been formed by the government, the Decision Support Service. So what was what's the problem?
So I suppose first and foremost, I'd like to say that I don't have any issue with anybody working in the Decision Support Service. Anytime I've rung in, they've been nothing but professional, kind, helpful. I think the system itself, I think the intention was to make it easier. Mm-hmm. It was possibly to take it away from the solicitors. I'm not sure why, but maybe to make it easier for people to get an enduring power of attorney. However, my experience hasn't been particularly easy. I suppose I started the application process back last August of 2023, and the end of July, so about 2 weeks ago, I finally got it sorted. And I am now, we needed the enduring power of attorney to make a Fair Deal application. Sure lots of people know what that is, but they are now not recognising the documentation that I sent to
them. Why not? But this is state documentation.
Exactly. I think that the fundamental problem is that whoever has introduced or whoever has spearheaded this new system, they haven't made sure that all the stakeholders who would ever come in contact with an EPA, an enduring power of attorney, know what it should look like, know what the new document
now,
looks
part
like.
Now, as part of this new organisation, Decision Support, is it to bypass solicitors, i.e. fees,
well,
money?
Well, that's my understanding of it. Yeah, I think so, because the role of the solicitor, prior to the change in legislation, the solicitor took care of the whole thing. You'd go to your solicitor, they'd manage it, and that was that. Now, the role of the solicitor has been reduced almost to kind of just like the role of the GP. They meet the person and they say, yes, this person has capacity when they're making it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And how much does that cost?
One of your researchers did ask me that. I actually can't remember, but I can't remember how much that cost. It was a few hundred euro, but the reason why it cost me more than it potentially should have is because I wasn't confident embarking on this process myself. It's like a big legal thing. And so I went to a solicitor. I contacted a few solicitors, and a number of solicitors wanted to have nothing to do with it. So I did find a solicitor who was helpful. And
now what do you mean? Hang on. A number of solicitors...
They wanted nothing to do with it. What did they say to you?
I don't want names. What did they say to you?
Well, no, they said they basically just redirected me to the Decision Support Service website.
Okay.
And what I've heard informally from people is that no solicitor said to me, "I want nothing to do with it." But what I've heard informally from some solicitors I know is that they are not happy about this change in legislation. Their role is very unclear. I mean, maybe there's rumblings that they might revert to the old system. I don't know. So there were two solicitors that I contacted who just redirected me to the Decision Support Service website. But I did manage to find a solicitor who talked me through the process.
Oh, very good.
But obviously, you pay for that.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay. Obviously.
So, yes. Yeah. So that, but if I was to talk somebody else through it, I know now that I wouldn't need a solicitor for a large part of it. It's really just for the assessing the capacity of the person who's making the enduring power of attorney.
And tell me, because funny enough, I was talking to a number of people this morning about applying to the Arts Council for a grant. I was reading an article by the well-regarded playwright Jimmy Murphy, and Jimmy was saying that he said in the article that the application form now is no longer about art, it's about how good you can do the application form. And I also heard that from another participant in the arts who got a very modest grant, even though they're a massive performing organisation, and they said, "We gave up looking for the grant because the application form was just crazy. They had to employ someone to fill out the application form." Now, you are IT savvy.
I'm IT savvy. I wouldn't be an IT whiz, but I, in a prior lifetime, worked in IT, and I am perfectly competent. But to be honest, it's not the technology, really, that is the problem. It's all the hoops you have to jump through, is more the problem than the technology.
But the other thing I'm conscious of is that you're looking, there's a ticking clock here. Sorry
to
put it that way. Because nobody's getting any younger. Nobody's getting...
And that was, for my family anyway, I mean, I know of people who organise this when they're in their 50s and their 60s.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we didn't have that. That wasn't in our family. So my dad is in his 80s. It was time sensitive that we get this organised.
On the one hand, and I know Minister Anne Rabbitt tried to mediate between the Law Society and the Decision Support Service, but as I say, my hearing last week about the Decision Support Service said there's a few glitches, but everything will work out. And
well, I
can hear your frustration. I know that.
I thought getting that email or getting that notification that it had been enacted, well, it's called notified now, but it has been enacted, would be the end of the stress. But now now the Fair Deal Office are telling me I'm giving them the wrong documentation because they haven't been trained, obviously, in what the new documentation should look like. So it's not necessarily their fault. But the other government departments haven't been, informed.
And they don't seem to. That's bizarre, isn't it?
Well, yeah, anyway, it's a little bit difficult because you're already in a very, it's not a pleasant thing to be organising. But you have to set that aside.
And there's a lot. You've got medical statements and various things.
It's not easily done,
and rightly so. You don't want people abusing it. Anyway, there's no evidence that it has been abused. Okay, Sinead, and why the change was necessary. Okay, Sinead, and your dad?
Yeah.
He's okay, is he? How's he doing?
He is okay at the moment.
Good.
Yeah, he's
great,
okay
great.
At the moment.
And kind regards to him and yourself.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sinead, and thanks for raising it. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
In my lack of lucidity the other day, I went off on a ramble. Sorry, it was deliberate because I love it. Table tennis and the Olympics. How brilliant it was. So absolutely brilliant to watch. And I mentioned, did Ireland have, we don't have anyone at the Paris Olympics. But I mentioned Jim Langan, who when I was a child, he was the table tennis bigwig. Now, that's only now I'm realising how big Jim Langan was in table tennis. Because Frank O'Reilly has contacted us. Frank, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. So tell us about, first of all, have we got a team? We don't, obviously, at the Olympics.
No, Joe, but we do have Colm Judge in Paralympic, and he's a wonderful player.
Oh, great,
and
great.
We are following him, and he's great.
Okay,
yeah,
and then the coach stroke manager stroke trainer of the GB table tennis team, isn't he, from Ireland?
That's right, John Murphy. Actually, he came through the club that I'm a member of, the ALSA. The ALSA club.
We've a little bit of. When is the last time Ireland was represented in table tennis at the Olympics, if ever?
I don't remember them ever being represented in the Olympics. But Jim himself, Joe, was a world class player. He actually beat the Chinese number one player.
Wow! This is Jim Langan.
Yes, Jim Langan. He beat Ying Ting, which was the Chinese world champion at the time, and he was reckoned to be one of the best players in the world at that time. He also beat the great Czechoslovakian player Jaroslav Stanek, who won World Cup medals, Joe. So he was a brilliant table tennis player. And we were shocked, of course, at his death. He died on the 13th of July, 2003, at 54 years of age from a heart attack. And we were very saddened, Joe.
I remember. Now, isn't it the same Jim Langan that went on to run? Maybe I'm wrong now, the furniture shop.
Absolutely, yeah, okay, Joe, yes.
Oh, God. Jim is 21 years past.
21 years, Joe. Lord rest him. And he's playing table tennis, Joe, with his good friend, Chester Barnes, and I don't know if you remember Chester Barnes.
No, I don't.
He was as big as life, as well as Jim. They were two gentlemen players, but they were world class players, Joe. Yes, and he's playing table tennis up there with the Angels at the moment. So, Joe, I'm sure the Angels are having a great time because there were two just unbelievable players. I think in England we haven't seen a player like Chester Barnes. Chester Barnes wrote a book called More Than a Match, Joe. And in the book he said, I played table tennis all over the world, but I've never played a player like Jim Langan. He said, he was just unbelievable. I just could never beat him. And he always beat me in three sets. And yes, I've beaten the best players in the world, but he says, I cannot beat Jim Langan. So that was Jim Langan. But Joe, Jim Langan and Tommy Caffrey, they played as a doubles team and they were, for 3 years, unbeatable. They were European champions, Joe.
Wow.
And Tommy Caffrey, Joe, has over 160 caps, international caps for Ireland, which is unbelievable for a player of that ilk, you know, to play. And table tennis, Joe, is the world's best sport, according to the World Federation. They took out, they took a test on all world sports, and table tennis came out the best. They said it was the best sport to play because cognitive function, hand-eye coordination, they said it was unbelievable for your health. Now doctors are recommending, Joe, that to play table tennis. Everybody should be playing table tennis because it staves off dementia later on in your life, Joe.
Okay.
And I always believe this, that children playing table tennis, their cognitive function is unbelievable. Now, Joe, the Korean Institute of Science, sports science, they carried out a test as well, and they said that when they tried patients with dementia, they found playing table tennis slowed the dementia down to a crawl. And they also said that when they tried it out on patients with ASD, autism spectrum disorder,
I presume you've been watching this.
Oh, I have, Joe, and I know the match you were watching because Truls Mordaunt, the great player now from Sweden. He's only 22 years of age. He knocked out the world champion.
Is table tennis played in most countries in the world? Because it's a relatively cheap sport.
Joe, it is. And there's 300 million in China play it, Joe. 20 million in the USA play it. 370,000 in England play it. 80,000 in Ireland play it, Joe.
Wow.
But we could do with a lot more.
Has it waned, Frank? Why? How come we don't have...
Yes, it has, Joe. We just don't get the publicity. And that's why I'm so delighted, Joe, that you came on and said something about this sport, because it is a magnificent sport to play. It's such a friendly sport, and children love this sport, Joe, if they're introduced to it. But, Joe, there's a saying, Joe, and I don't know whether you've ever heard this, Joe, but it's true. What you cannot see, you cannot be. So if children do not see table tennis being played, how can they be table tennis players, Joe? So it would be lovely to see more people playing the sport. Joe, I've some good news for your listeners, Joe, because, Joe, I played with Tommy Caffrey, Joe, just before COVID. And we played out in Perth, and there was a four-man team there. There was myself, there was Tommy Caffrey, there was Martin Pickett, the Ulster champion, and Oliver Adamson, the great Irish coach, Joe, and table tennis player. And during COVID, when I have nothing else to do, I wrote a little book, Joe, and it's free. Free to all your members out there, Joe. Anybody who's interested in table tennis, the book is called Ireland Table Tennis, Hidden Secrets and Memoirs, and it's most of the libraries in Ireland and England, and a shop that's dear to your heart. I know that Alan Hanna's wonderful bookshop in Rathmines, it's also there, Joe. He's great for Irish authors, Joe.
Okay.
He gives you a chance, and I only put it in that shop, Joe, because in that shop they supply the libraries, and the only other place, Joe, is my own place in the Alsa Sports Complex, Dublin Airport. All the profits, Joe, is for children's table tennis. We're starting out.
The oldest competitor in the Olympics is, and it's not that old, 63 years of age, is Ji Lianyi, who represents Luxembourg at the top level. So it's incredible.
Absolutely, Joe.
Okay.
And Joe, there's a person, Joe, at 106 years of age called Dorothy D. Lowe. And she was a legend in table tennis, a little red-headed woman from Australia, a beautiful woman, Joe. And she was still playing table tennis at 100 years of age. And on her birthday at 106 years of age, Joe, she asked, "What would you like for your birthday?" And she said, "I'd love to go to my table tennis club and have a game of table tennis." And she was 106 years of age. And Dorothy D. Lowe, Joe, won gold medals still at 100 years of age playing vets table tennis. So you can play table tennis all your life, Joe. And it's, as I said, it's a wonderful sport. And it's wonderful for your health.
If you have space, this is a problem. Maybe if you're lucky enough to have a garage or whatever.
This is the thing. It's actually quite simple. Do you know in Wuhan during the COVID, the Chinese people played on their own kitchen tables, Joe, against the wall.
Oh, exactly.
Playback
facility.
They said it kept them from going insane because the playback facility.
And you know, a lot of sports stores now, they sell the fold up table tennis tables, even for. We used to see them at the Uke, St. Mary's Uke Club. But anyway, a lot of people, thankful. As you say, you've really sold the sport, Frank. And apparently Michael Smallford was a great table tennis player in his day. But anyway, you say we've up-and-coming players and we've a rep.
We have
Paralympics.
Sophie
Early,
Early, and she's only 17 years of age.
Right.
And she's ranked 2 in Europe.
And Art McLaughlin.
And Art McLaughlin, 16 years of age, plays on the men's senior team, Joe. And these players,
How many people out there listening have heard of these players?
Okay, well, we will soon, Frank. Thanks to you. Good to meet him, Olga. That's Frank O'Reilly. Mary Therese Strahan. Thanks, Frank. Great to talk about table tennis. I think that's the first time we've ever spoken about table tennis on Liveline. A rich tapestry. Mary Therese Strahan, Broadway Diner. We still haven't found them. We still haven't got them. Were you caught?
Unfortunately, yes, Joe.
Many tickets did you buy?
I bought 4 for my daughter's birthday. She's studying musical theatre, and we had been to New York and had been to the restaurant there, Franz Stardust Diner, which have all the servers or the singers from the shows and all the music, and you get your burger and chips, whatever. And I thought, oh, it's coming to Dublin. Brilliant, sadly. And I had emailed because I was thinking I should know by now where this venue is. And I sent all the emails to your researcher there, but I did get replies. You know, they said, talk to Aaron, he's in charge of Dublin.
What do you think, Mary Therese? Do you think your money is gone?
I'm afraid so. Tickets were for Saturday.
There's so many people being stung. Due to start tomorrow, 3 or 4 shows a day in Dublin, a mystery location, which they haven't. At least we've had contact from people who bought tickets up to and including next Sunday, so they've taken thousands.
Mine was for Saturday.
And they may be in liquidation. But let's hear from them. Okay, Mary Therese. Okay, thanks indeed.
Right,
Broadway
thank
Diner.
You.
Let us know what your experience was, and we can put together whatever they've done and whatever they're up to. We don't know, but we want our money back. I'm sorry, lads. Broadway Diner, you can sing all the way to the bank, but we're coming after you. Who's Kelly is coming after Yang Wenglu tonight? Where's Anna? Anna, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Oh, you're on WhatsApp. Great. I presume you're in Paris.
No, I was in their ambassador with Nicky White for the first weekend it was on, and they said they'd see if they could send us back over for the finals, but it didn't happen. So
okay, so
I'm tonight. Here at home.
Kelly, your hero, is on tonight. This is the great line I heard from Kelly the other night on Drive Time.
Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and that's all I have to say. Good night, Irene.
Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, that's all I have to say. Good night, Irene. Hope it's good night, Yang Wenglu. Do you know this Chinese boxer? Anna.
Yeah, Kelly Boxer in 2019 in the World Championships, but that would have been Kelly's first World Championship at that level. You know, she got to the final and the Chinese girl beat her. That was the day that if you saw the photograph, Joe, I was plaiting Kelly's hair in the dressing room.
Oh, that's right, remember that.
Kelly boxed very well. She wasn't outclassed or anything, but she's a complete different Kelly now. The Kelly Harrington we have now is triple the time, not better than what she was then.
Okay, and even that phrase that you use, here it is again.
She's very funny, isn't she?
Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and that's all I have to say. Good night, Irene.
Good night, Irene.
But she's, you know, Joe,
she's extraordinarily focused, isn't she?
She is. I was talking to Trish Herbert, the lady that's the director of our boxing, when I was in Paris, and she said, Kelly is tall, but she's now 3 feet higher with the confidence that she had. She was so focused over there. I was on WhatsApp with her one day and I said, will you be in the arena? Because we were going through. And she said, no, Anna, I'm in my room resting. And that's what Kelly would do until she's going to box. She is so focused. It's unreal. And she didn't have a great year, you know, but she's so focused now. And I really believe that she can be a double gold medalist tonight.
Okay, and our best wishes to Kelly and Bandy and Yvonne and Christy and the whole family.
Oh,
Portland Road. There won't be a cow milked in Portland Road now until next Saturday week if she wins tonight.
She will. But I'll tell you something. She is a great ambassador for female, not just for female boxing, for boxing, but she is a brilliant ambassador for the inner city and
brilliant,
for Dublin.
Absolutely.
She is brilliant, girl.
She really is. By the way, Anna, how do you watch the match? Are you behind the couch? Are you standing up? Are you sitting down? Are you chewing?
Now, come here, I'll tell you, Joe. I'm not too bad today now, but on Sunday, because this Brazilian was calling her out. Now, I know Kelly wasn't on social media, so she wouldn't have been listening to all of that, right? But I was listening to my daughter, and my daughter got very annoyed. But I said, when she was gone, I said, all I want is for Kelly to get a medal. I don't care what colour medal she got. Okay. She got the bronze and I said, anything after this is a bonus. But yeah. Then I got selfish. I wanted her to get to the final. And against the Brazilian, I was nervous because I watched her and she was a strong girl. But
sure,
then
there's no easy bouts in the Olympics.
And as
there
I,
is not.
No, there is not. And as I said, no one should ever underestimate Kelly Harrington, because Kelly is so composed. Oh, my God. Her boxing is so outstanding at the moment. You know, it really is. And she'll go into that tonight. She'll be so focused going into that. It doesn't matter who she's boxing. It won't matter, because Kelly will concentrate. And Kelly, in my opinion, will actually win that tonight.
Okay. And in Kelly's own words, which are?
Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and that's all I have to say. Good night, Irene.
Well, good night, Irene.
Do you know, Joe, there's nothing false about Kelly Harrington. What you see is what you get. She's a wonderful boxer and she's a wonderful individual.
Okay. Anna, will you mind yourself? Will you? Don't let the nerves and the excitement get the
better. Joe, if you saw me Sunday night, I couldn't eat on Sunday. My stomach was in knots. I couldn't eat.
Okay.
I had a brandy and a port to settle my stomach.
Oh, that was worth it just for that. Now we'll talk to you tomorrow, come hell or high water, okay? And you can give us your analysis of the bout.
And I ask everyone out there, get on that television tonight at 10 o'clock. And you mightn't be in Paris like me. I'm heartbroken I'm not in Paris. But look, it's not about me, it's about Kelly. Support her from your homes tonight. She deserves it.
And it's on about 6 minutes past 10, isn't it?
About that. She's a national hero. That's what Kelly Harrington is. Okay. And she is the best thing in boxing at the moment.
Okay. Well,
but Joe, can I say something before
I
go?
Yes, briefly.
Briefly. We send out a very young team. They're between 20 and 24, seven of them. They're there for another 3 to 4 Olympics. Now, there was one or two. You all saw Pocket Rocket, Dana Moorhouse. That little girl was robbed. She won that contest. But you had the other lads and you had the girls. Every one of them equipped themselves perfectly.
Okay, it's on after 10 o'clock. It's near. We're getting closer to 10 o'clock now, Anna. We're way after 3 o'clock. So apologies to Anna Geary on her debut, and best wishes to Anna, not on her debut in broadcast, her debut filling in on Ray Darcy. Well done, Anna. And today's programme was produced by Annette Egan.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.